Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Many crimes that occur in the United States are generally committed by individuals under the age of 25, and many of these individuals have since aged out of crime, have served 25 years or more for their offenses, and deserve to be considered for release. The United States is the only country in the world that has mass incarceration, high rates of suicides, unrealistic sentencing, long-term solitary confinement, restrictive housing units, abuses, and severe deprivations. This is the only country in the world that has life and life without parole sentencing. Their educational programs are well thought out and allowed for all prisoners interested. The housing facilities are more humane settings, and prisoners are treated as human beings rather than objects, and the interaction between staff and inmates is more of a humane and therapeutic interaction. This is what it is in other countries. We have with us today Carlos King, an incarcerated individual whom in 1992 and at the age of 19 was sentenced to 50 to 75 years in prison for an armed robbery. Carlos, a young black male at the time, was full of anger and pain. There was so much going on in his life, and as many other individuals in the communities and in prisons are unable to express their feelings and subsequently acting out in negative ways that eventually lead to their incarceration. However, throughout the years of his incarceration, maturing and struggling to be a better person, Carlos has achieved so many of his goals and is here today to talk about it. But before we start, I want to something that's going to be happening today, which is very sad. There is a young man, Julius Jones, out of Oklahoma, who is due to be executed. The governor of Oklahoma, as is or as was with the governor at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger, when Tukey Williams was executed, they don't consider a human life themselves. If they had any kind of heart and have any children, they should know better than to execute people to begin with. Never mind people that committed crimes years ago, crimes at a time when they were very young, questionable whether it was purposely, whether it's self-defense, or whether it was wrongfully convicted. I want to say to these governors who feel the way that they do about human beings that are incarcerated, many of you grew up with parents, both parents. Many of you grew up in well-to-do homes. None of you grew up in a situation where a lot of these young men and women, not only minorities, not only people of color, but also white, but the majority are people of color. Many of them didn't grow up with a silver spoon in their mouth. They struggled along the way. And anyone that would execute someone like Julius Jones, when everyone around the world is trying to stop that execution, as with Tukey Williams, we live in a society where we have governors that are animals themselves. And if they don't have consideration for another life, they should be behind those bars serving a life and life without sentence. They should also be in those prisons being executed. So I hope everyone will say a prayer for this Julius Jones. We'll try to make those calls, last-minute calls. I understand he's due to be executed at 4 p.m. today. And please pray for the family, because I know that the family of Julius Jones, I know what they're going through right now. Many of us are hurting because we have loved ones serving long, harsh sentences behind prison walls, being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed. Many of us do, and it hurts. But when you know your loved one's going to die and there's nothing you can do about it, and the family's being prevented from even holding or hugging their loved one before he's executed, they've been denied the right. They can only see him behind glass. I used to once respect this country. I used to once love this country. I was born in this country, but I despise it now. And I despise every single cold-hearted governor or any government official or any individual who hates someone because of the pigmentation of their skin. and want so much revenge that they will execute someone without a thought. And I want everybody to realize this, because this is going on all too much in this country and it needs to stop. So we are now going to welcome our guest, Carlos King, and I want to thank his sister for and him for coming on the show. And I want to ask, Carlos, can you please say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself? But first, your sister may want to say something too. Can you hear me?
Hi, good morning. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, Miss Leona. How are you?
Good. Do you want to introduce yourself to the audience and also bring Carlos on?
I am Aisha King, the only sister of Carlos King, and I have stood by my brother's side. I went and got a job at 16 just so I could help my brother, and I've been here for 29 years, and it's time for him to come home. So come on and tell him how you coming home, Carlos.
Carlos, we want to welcome you on the show. We want to thank you, and we want to hear your story. I also want to say that Carlos, because of the limited time he has, he may have to call in again, and hopefully we'll have him back on the show anyway, so he'll be able to finish up whatever we don't get from him today. So, Carlos, do you want to introduce yourself, please? He may have to call back.
Nope, I think
Hello?
We got Carlos.
Oh. How you doing?
Carlos, can you hear us?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to welcome you on the show. It's an honor to have you on with us, and I'd like to have you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit about your circumstances.
All right, my name is Carlos King. I'm currently locked up in Michigan prison. I've been incarcerated now for 30 years. I would like to say that I don't come on my own. I'm here to represent every incarcerated man and woman that suffers due to the tragedy of prison.
Amen.
It's been a long, tumultuous journey, and yet I still stand here ready to talk to all of you.
Thank you so much, Carlos.
Yes.
So I explained to the audience that you will probably have to call back in again, but some of the things that go on in the prisons we're well aware of, especially advocates across the country. And as I always say, the problems are the same in every state. The problems are the same, the abuses, the deprivation, everything. But the way they're operated, according to the governors of each state, the way they're operated are totally different. And we know that there's a lot of abuses going on. We know there's a lot of deprivations, provocations. We know there's a lot of medical, psychological, and spiritual neglect. We know there's a lot of these things that are going on in the prisons. And we want to reach out also to our government leaders who see this, who know this, and what are they doing about it? We want to reach out to them to get them more involved in stopping some of these things.
Right. Well, one thing I learned about watching a lot of politicians is the fact they respond ambiguously to tough questions and tough issues. You know, I've been locked up since I was 18 years old for armed robbery. I received a 50-year sentence because the judge violated my constitutional rights back in 1992 when I should only been sentenced to 3 to 8 years in prison. Right now I'm waiting for the courts to resentence me, but they taking longer than they should have, and I should be out of prison. But people always ask me, you know, what does prison look like on the inside? And, you know, early on in my confinement, I used to get mad when they used to say that because I didn't understand, like, what you mean how it look, how prison look. It's ugly. Do you want to come here? I didn't understand what they was asking until recently. I understood what they were saying. And now I realize it's like what prison look like on the inside. And I can tell you it's like, close your eyes and imagine going to a place where the first thing they strip and tear away is your humanity, where they detach you from every good thing that reminds you of who you were before prison, your family, your friends, and every beautiful memory that ever brought meaning, love, and direction to your life, they work to destroy. They do this because without your humanity, they are justified in how they are going to mentally torture, physically deprive, and tediously degrade you to a life that isn't fit for even an animal to live. Once you are inside of their prison, they will work tirelessly hard to break everything about you, your mental, physical, and spiritual essence, which connects you to the beauty of life, will be gone if they have their way. The agony and loneliness of prison, for me, the hardest part of being in prison for 30 years is the loneliness I feel every second of every day. Nothing screams at your spiritual and emotional self like loneliness. The crippling effects of it alone made me regret every bad decision I ever made in my life. Being alone and not being able to run into the arms of compassion and love when I needed it most made every day unbearable to live through. I craved death many times because the agony of prison, coupled with the deprivation of my freedom, was psychologically debilitating. I lost clarity of thought many times through the course of my confinement. And even though I outwardly maintained strength and defiance for my circumstances, internally, I was screaming at the top of my lungs for help and relief. It wasn't popular to express to anyone the way I was feeling inside, especially to the Michigan Department of Correction, because I've seen how they respond to that. They pump you full of drugs, and I wasn't about to let that happen. So instead, I carried and concealed my psychological trauma underneath the umbrella of my strength for a great number of years. But I think that changed me. That prevented me from expressing my pain, my sadness, and my sorrow. It hindered me from developing empathy and compassion. And for a lot of years, I was just existing. When I thought I was living or doing things that a normal person would do despite the circumstances. But my circumstances wasn't normal. And the abnormality of them produced a resentment inside of me that I held on to for many years. Being a non-human to them is the only way they would see you. Nothing about you would garner their compassion, empathy, or respect. I understood that early on. I was invisible on every level, and they treated me like three-fifths of a person, like my ancestors before me. My subservience is the only thing they sought, because in truth, the Michigan Department of Corrections are the real live bullies. They prey on your vulnerability relentlessly. And once they had their fill, they pass you around to make sure that their comrades...
You have 1 minute remaining.
They pass you around to make sure that their comrades get some notches on their belt by destroying the rest of what's left of you. There's no escaping them. You either fall in line or you spend your time in segregation, which is another form of torture they utilize in order to break you. So if a person wants to ask me, your psychological, your mind today, yeah, I'm strong, I'm intelligent, I done became educated, but I'm affected. And that affection contributes to my sorrow, my loneliness, my anguish at the system itself, because they ain't trying to rehabilitate me. I had to seek rehabilitation on my own. I had to find the inner strength within me to want to change who I was. And that change didn't come easy.
Thank you for using GTL.
And he'll be back with us
Carlos will be rejoining us shortly. In the meantime, I'm going to allow one of the things before we go any further, too. I want to bring this up. Carlos has much support. He has support from his family, from the churches. He has a lot of support out there. And he's going through all this, and he's feeling all this. I want people to also consider those who are inside that have no family or that have very little support. Because if Carlos is feeling this kind of pain and loneliness and all these things that are going on in his life, this is somebody that has gone through so much torture and torment. And this is the way it is inside. And when people ask what it's like in prison, when people go into the prison and the prison officials know that somebody from the outside is coming in, especially if they're influential or government, they're going to clean up their act. They're going to clean up the facility. So it's going to look clean inside. But sometimes no one thinks to even try to go into the cells, into the areas where no one sees but the prison employees. Because I've had prisoners talk about the rats that they have made their pets because they have nothing. I have listened to prisoners talk about spiders, these very little things that we don't even consider. And this is all they have to keep them company. People need to realize if it were you, if it was your family member, how would you respond? Especially if they're crying out for help and no one's willing to help. If you're in an influential position, why would you delay trying to help people that need your help so badly? Is it because you don't have children, or is it because you know that your children are going to be okay because you have that influence or you have the money, the wealth? A lot of these prisoners grew up without a father. A lot of them grew up in situations where they were hated just because of the pigmentation of their skin. And a lot of them, as Carlos mentioned, were under the age of 21 or 25. Many are incarcerated because they committed their crime at a very, very early age and stage in their lives. And now, how old is Carlos now? I'm sorry. Can you please say your name again? I've got so much on my mind right now.
Aisha.
Aisha, I am so sorry. Can you speak a little bit on that?
My brother is 49.
And he went in when he was 18.
18. That was really emotional for me to listen to that. But at 16, I had to learn my strength because I knew my brother needed it. And I've been here standing strong for him. And I've rented cars and bought cars just to go and visit him. I made sure all my children met him. Unfortunately, it had to be in prison.
I know what you're feeling. You take your time. You know, people, a lot of times will say, what about the victim? I want people to know. I want all of you to know in the audience. And please, let this go viral. Because there are two victims when situations happen. There's the offenders, but there's the victims. But there's also circumstances behind a lot of things that happen. And sometimes people don't take the time to try to sort out what really happened. This restorative justice, I think, is very valuable and important, and I hope it becomes more popular than it is, more mentioned and more discussed, because restorative justice brings the victims and the offenders together.
Hello.
And they have an opportunity. They have an opportunity to speak about the causes of the crime. Now, we're listening to somebody that broke down because she's hurting so much over her loved one's incarceration. I know that. I know that pain. Not only for myself, not only for the loved ones on the outside, but those on the inside that are going through so much and nothing's being done. And I'll tell you, with a lot of the lawyers, a lot of these people that are advocating for prisoners, a lot of them pick and choose who they want to help. If it's somebody they know, they're going to help. If it's somebody that they know that's a friend of somebody they know, they always make sure it's in their circle or in their reach in their hand to help these people. What about the lost and forgotten? If Carlos was talking about the loneliness, the pain that they go through while inside, they're not able to do the things that we're able to do. They're told when to get up. They're told when to eat. They're told when to go to sleep. They're told what they can do and what they can't do. And a lot of them don't have the things that we have. We have been in a pandemic this whole going on 2 years now. And a lot of these prisoners are kept in their cells without even a television. Their televisions have been taken. They have no connection to the outside world other than the letters they may get, if they get them, because of the mail tampering in these prisons. Or the emails they're able to get if their tablets are still in their possession, where a lot of these tablets are being taken from the prisoners now. Think about the victims. When I say the victims, I mean the victims on both sides. And the media needs to get more involved. Media needs to be into these places helping and trying to see what's really going on behind those prison walls. American Psychological Association, American Psychiatric Association, they need to be more involved. They're getting all this money for what? So, Carlos, I know your time is short in there, so let's have you speak, as you were saying before.
Well, you just spoke about the victims. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize and understand what victim meant until I understood that I was a victim myself. I've been the victim to a system that was designed for me to fail ever since I was a kid. Dropping out of school in seventh grade, never having a father, never met my father one time, growing up in poverty, poor, making choices that was not reflective of what my mother wanted from me. But then when you talk about the victims of my crime and the compassion and the empathy that comes from me for the victims of my crime, I had to find that empathy and compassion. Because I didn't understand or know how to deal with somebody else's pain because I was hurting myself. All of my life it has been a ball of pain, and I carried that ball like a ball and chain, like the adage say, you carry it around like a ball and chain. That's how I felt. I intoxicated myself with alcohol. I smoked marijuana every day. I ran the streets because I was always accepting, looking for acceptance from things and people that was reflective of my pain. But I never had somebody to sit me down and try to get me to understand my trauma, the things that affected me, the things that bothered me. Everybody remained on the outside of me, never really delving inside of me to be able to dig the things out of me that was hindering me from progress, from hindering me from being productive. So coming to prison as an 18-year-old kid, I didn't know what it meant. I didn't have no education. I didn't have no skills or anything, but I had to find all that. I had to find the skills. I had to find the desirability because the Michigan Department of Correction, they are not in the business of rehabilitating prisoners. They're in the business of housing you.
Can I say one thing, Carlos? What you're talking about right now is what's called victims becoming offenders. I want the audience to know that you were a victim before becoming offenders, and this is why we – like you said, you were talking about your past and things that you didn't understand and nobody to help you. This is a victim before offending, and this is what we have a majority of in the prisons across the country. Go ahead and finish what you were saying, Carlos, because it's very important.
I knew that coming to prison, going through what I went through was a challenge for me. And I didn't understand it, but when I went to a maximum security prison, I think that's when I started really just thinking about the things that mattered to me. I was searching for freedom. I was locked down 23 hours a day. But I was searching for freedom, but really, truly, I was searching for myself. And then within that search, I found it in the victims of my crime. Because I came across a victim statement that she read at my sentencing. And I remember her words. They stung like a million bees. They made me cry. But in a courtroom, I was so callous and cold that I didn't even care about how she felt, how her family felt. But when I was reading those words in maximum security prison, they stung like a million bees, and they affected me because at that point, I realized that I was a victim too. And the realization of that, it's like you becoming healthy for the first time, but you've been sick all your life. and your health is predicated on the pain and the sickness that you carry, and now you got to deal with it. Now you understand you hurt because you no longer intoxicated on the things of the world, whether it be drugs, whether it be the street life, whether it be women, whether it be family. You alone can find. So I had to deal with my struggle. And dealing with my pain, I was able to develop empathy and compassion for the victims of my crimes. So I realized that I can be an instrument to do some good. But the thing about it was, the MDOC was putting roadblocks in my way. But they was hiding their hands as if they wasn't doing it, but they was intentionally sabotaging progress, wasn't offering me no kind of solution for my incarceration. They was just offering me more incarceration. And I just think about this. How can there be justice when at this very moment I am housed at a correctional facility? Well, their entire workforce is 99.9% white, while 0.1% are Indian or other. Absolutely no black people working here. That ratio equals no understanding, no sympathy, and definitely no regards for a prison population where the majority of its residents are black. So what do you think happens to us in such an environment? We are treated harshly every day by a collection of evil that wish they could string us up and hang us at the nearest tree, an evil that persists as an unbreakable force on all three shifts. I know you may be thinking, that can't happen in today's society. You probably was taught or had a notion that a police officer couldn't murder someone in cold blood until you saw George Floyd lying lifeless under the knee of that upstanding police officer, huh? Pun definitely intended. We are facing mental and spiritual extinction in prison, and there's no end in sight if mass incarceration is allowed to continue. We were sentenced to prison for crimes that were committed against society, but our prison system didn't say we would be mentally, spiritually, and emotionally tortured by correctional officers. They lie and betray the trust of society every day. And then they hide behind their uniforms as if they are right in the track. Nonsense. To me, to Carlos King, the value of a person should be in the quality of their humanity and not the prejudice within their ideas and beliefs. So if you close your eyes and imagine all this, then maybe you saw exactly what they have sought to turn me into. A vessel of despair, a dark and gloomy creature with no relevance of existence, who has unfulfilled dreams, painful days, miserable nights, and enough mental trauma to last a lifetime. Then I would say that your visual recognition of the inhumane treatment I have lived through for over 30 years is an accurate assessment. You can see the maliciously driven healthcare worker that denies us adequate healthcare because of the money they are working to save the private corporations. But what about the perfect correctional officer who claims he or she comes to work and professionally does his or her job with dignity and respect? But underneath his deception lies the truth of his intent, which is to mentally beat, emotionally destroy, and verbally abuse every prisoner for his entire shift. Those are just some of the tragedies that makes prison an unsuccessful vehicle that was never designed to help correct the behavior of the lost and downtrodden. It was created to profit and benefit off of poor black and brown people's pain and suffering. This system was created to lock poor people up and force us under the 13th Amendment of the Constitution to work jobs for pennies a day, if pennies at all. The shocking truth in our historical tragedy is the fact that they found yet another way to dehumanize us, tear our families apart, and make a ton of money while doing so. Wow. That is alone should give any conscientious person pause. The MDOC doesn't even attempt to provide rehabilitative paths of success for the incarcerated. The incarcerated must find that path on their own. The MDOC locks us up, punish, punish, punish. No rehabilitation available in Michigan. Just imagine coming to prison with a 10-year sentence for a violent crime, such as armed robbery, just for the sake of argument. And for 9.5 years, they never once recommended or placed you in any program for violent offenders. Now, violent prevention program and assault of offenders program are mandatory programs that must be completed before you are paroled. But they do not place you in these programs until 6 months before your earliest release date. So in other words, when a prisoner is about to walk out of prison after serving time for a violent crime, they give you a 2-month crash course in VPP and AOP. Care less if the incarcerated man took it upon himself to understand why they committed the violent crime in the first place, or if they found empathy and remorse during the course of their confinement. The MDOC doesn't concern themselves with the progress and change of the incarcerated, because they want us to stay in the same state of mind so we can continue to perpetuate the high rate of recidivism that allows the architects of this system to get rich by destroying the humanity of prison. Everything is wrong with this picture. The inside of prison is not a pretty sight for the faint of heart, but it's an everyday reality for the men and the women who are forced to live under these harsh conditions. We have realized through our suffering that although it's very dark, a great number of us have unearthed enough light to illuminate our individual desire to be more than what brought us to prison in the first place. So despite the MDOC's unwillingness to assist us, we have taken it upon ourselves to become conscientious in our thinking, productive in our actions, remorseful in our behavior, inspired by our willingness to change and determined in our plan for progress. We no longer subscribe to a criminal mindset, and although we are far from perfect, we challenge ourselves every day to be better than the previous day in some particular form or fashion. And we do this on our own accord. Just imagine, I dropped out of school in the seventh grade, and all I knew was crime and habit. But now I've grown. I became an individual that desires to put his selfish behavior in the garbage where it belongs and deal from a perspective of humanity. I didn't even know what being humane consisted of. I knew I was a human being, but I didn't know what humanity consisted of. When a person said, "Are you humane?" Like, what's that? I didn't know that that meant kindness and compassion. I didn't know I can look in the mirror and the person that stands back at me.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Was someone I could now appreciate? Trauma, trauma, trauma. Just imagine you waking up every day being told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. I'm not saying I didn't deserve some punishment or some corrective measures for the things I've done. But 50 years in prison for armed robbery? 50 years. How do you justify giving the person 50 years in prison for armed robbery and at the same time violate his constitutional rights? But then say, "Justice is blind. I uphold my integrity on the bench." And these are our people that we elect. These are the judges that's been instrumental in destroying our community. Prison, man, I wouldn't wish this on anyone.
Thank you for using GTL.
This is another issue. As you can all hear, they have a few minutes on the phone. They don't have an opportunity to hang up when they want to. They are told when to hang up. And for these 15-minute calls, which sometimes doesn't even amount to 15 minutes each time, they're paying these high rates to make these calls to their loved ones, even to the show. What he was saying is so true. And I want to bring up the case with the Rittenhouse. This teenager who assaulted or fatally wounded two people and one is seriously injured in the hospital. In his trial, they try to turn everything around, just as it is with the Arbery case. These three anger, hateful animals that tracked him down while he was just jogging, and they're making it seem like he was the perpetrator. He was the instigator when he didn't even have a weapon. But these people, because of the pigmentation of their skin, the courts are trying every way possible to make it seem like these people were not at fault at all. This judge and this lawyer that's going to say he didn't want any black pastors in the, in the courtroom. Black pastors in the courtroom. He did not want any black pastors in the courtroom. Are these people that are godly? If they believe in God, it shouldn't matter if the pastors are black or white. But they are going to bring up the fact that they didn't want black pastors in the courtroom. This is an example of the comparison between colors when it comes to prison issues, when it comes to offenses. So I'm going to bring back our guest, Carlos King, to finish what he was saying. Carlos, I'm sorry to interrupt you, and I know you have to keep calling in, and I know this is costing you. I want the audience to know, and I want people in general to know, the cost, this is where the money for prisoners go. It goes in their phone calls to try to bring awareness and try to get help. They're not benefiting from paying these phone bills. They shouldn't ask for their loved ones. And there is something things going on in the country right now where some politicians are actually trying to do away with these costs. But until that happens, unfortunately, this is what you have to go through.
Right. Everything in prison costs. And then you got to understand, we was poor. That means our family was poor. That means the money that they send us, we got to put it on the phone because we got to have engagements like this. Again, under the 13th Constitutional Amendment, it says slavery has been abolished unless you've been convicted of a crime. So technically, based upon their constitution, the constitution that we live by is we slaves, and they don't got to pay us. So, for example, I got a porter job. I work 5 days a week, and I only get paid $20 a month. I got to clean 5 bathroom toilets, 7 sinks, the floors, the showers, the urinals. All this only makes $20 a month. So just imagine you got to go to the store. You want to put some money on the phone so you can call your family, because a lot of us don't have family sending us any money. A lot of people in here suffering. So just imagine what you got to do with $20. You try to go to the store to get some products that you need for hygiene. A deodorant costs you $4. A toothpaste costs you $4. A bar of soap costs you 70 cents. A toothbrush costs you 20 cents. A bottle of lotion costs you $3. So just imagine $20 all you have to spend. So sometimes you got to get your lotion, but you can't get your toothpaste. You got to get your soap, but you can't get your deodorant. These are the choices that you make, and it don't get no better for the person to have no means of help in society. So I think about all the people that still rise based upon this situation. So I remember I wrote this poem called We the People. And the We the People was designed for society to know what the incarcerated go through. And I collectively brought We the People because that's what their constitution say, We the People, right? And they use that to denigrate us, reduce us, enslave us, and everything. So We the People, entrenched in this nefarious plague station called democracy, searching for empathy from the same people that continue to kill us so viciously. What is wrong with thee that we fail to see that they would never view us equally, because we are just cattle feed meant to remain asleep or till the cotton fields inside their penitentiaries. We the people, beautiful, amazing, and wonderfully made, but we've been placated and castrated and treated as slaves, never being afforded a real opportunity to reach a higher grade because the architects of the Constitution never intended for us to be saved. Through all the amendments and all the progress, we are still reduced to a peasant's wage, murdering one another in cold blood just to fill up the oppressor's graves, because our minds and our hearts are so fixated on this individual stage, whereas we'll turn our backs on the struggle just to get paid. We the people, courageous and strong, but we must do less talking if you want to reclaim our throne. We must put our pride to the side, become unified, and return back to the communities and clean the bloodstains from where all our young people have died. We must teach our own. We must love our skin tone. We must be reminded that the beauty in which we come from is still our own. Our freedom is our home, and our fight is our own. So until our very last breath, we must send this to their domes, the memories of our beautiful and amazing history and all the pain that they've caused, so that they can never escape their wrongs. We the people, we got to understand that we collective and we unified. We got to know that we greater than the vices and the bad choices that brought us to prison. In prison, the men and women, the many men, I'm not going to say some, we got a plethora of men and women that have made choices to be greater human beings. And we do this because we understand that we made some bad decisions. But it is not that we choose to act, but it's what we choose to do after those decisions that tells us where we are going and what we would do next. We now know that we are not defined by those previous decisions and that we can become productive brothers and sisters that can return back to society, ready to build and make beautiful the things we once helped to destroy and make ugly. We became the people by reading books on trauma, history, behavioral things, transformative justice, penitence, education, because a whole lot of us was uneducated. And just socially interacting with people inside and outside of prison that are reflective of positiveness that we work extremely hard to emulate. All the things we lacked in character or the things that hurt us in some particular way, we have worked not only to locate but to understand so we could eradicate what was bad and build upon what was good. Some of those things were empathy, remorse, compassion, love, identity of self, trauma-related pain, abuse, lack of parental guidance, moralities, principles, etc. We desire to enrich and display our good qualities so we can understand the bad things that happen to us and develop a path going forward so we can grow beyond them. We did this because our desire to be more than the incorrigible men and women that society sees us as. And we did this for us. We did this because we wanted to, and not because the MBOC aided in any way to our reformation. It took our individual courage, self-love, and realization to transform into greater versions of ourselves. Our journey is far from complete, so prison shouldn't be the final destination for the men and women who have chosen to be redeemed from their sufferings, to be able to grasp penitence and acts of kindness. So please make a way for us. Open up your hearts and understand. In no way is we saying the victims of our crimes don't matter. In no way we saying that we shouldn't be sympathetic and compassionate for their pain, for their suffering, for their loss, and for their tragedy. But we are worthy of that same compassion and mercy, because our tragic happened long before our crime. I was suffering before I went off the porch and started committing crime. Ain't nobody wanted to talk about my suffering. People told me, man, you got to be a man. So what because your father ain't in your life? You got to man up. Forget your father. I was just trying to understand what my father was. And so when people was telling me that, man, only the strong survive. If you talk about this, you crying about him because he ain't here, you're going to always be a weak individual. So what happened because of me? I became callous. The things I said I would never do if I had a child, I turned around and did. Left my son out there by himself at 1 year old because I didn't develop the fatherhood, because I didn't know how to be a father. So my son had to suffer. I love you, Gregory. If you listen, I love you with my whole heart. And I hate you to have to suffer without me. But didn't nobody teach me how to be a father. Didn't anybody teach me how to treat a woman, my son's mother, or any woman for that matter. I had to learn on the fly, but the things I was learning were the things you was teaching in school. I didn't know my history. I didn't know the suffering that we came from as black people, people of color. I didn't know. I wasn't given that information. But when I came to prison and found that information, man, it was an eye-opener. So me, I made the choice for me to be better. I saw a path forward. I have risen from the deepness of my sleep because I chose to be more than the prison number that they used to define me. No, I am more. I'm not that same 18-year-old immature, selfish, drug dealing, robbing and stealing, nickel slick hustler, taking advantage of my brothers and sisters and mothers almost 30 years ago. No. I am more. I'm the brother that stayed in the mud until I rose and self-discovered, educated my mind with the truth that was like no other. Free all the political prisoners so we may enjoy the presence of our sons and our daughters. Found empathy for my victims because I know they continue to suffer. Sought forgiveness from a power much greater than my own because I knew we needed each other. Yes. I have risen. I have cultivated my mind beyond the tragedies of my past because I am driven. I am no longer miseducated, influenced by bad behavior, or geared towards a destructive end that doesn't reflect my inherent nature. Yes, I have risen. I'm a brother that is dedicated to the struggle. I give everything I have, even my own life, to save the lives of my sisters and my brothers. And I stand on this at the apex of my structure because all I am and all I will ever be is tied within this transformation that has made me tougher. Yes, I have risen.
Powerful. That is powerful. You know, you are speaking out on behalf of so many of your fellow prisoners as well as people in the communities, these young kids in the communities that are lost.
Yes.
They don't know which way to turn. And we have adults that are no longer role models in this country. They're judges. You know, they're hypocrites. They're about power, greed, corruption, lies, deception. And this is what also causes a lot of people to end up in prison. They're vulnerable on the outside, and they get involved with the wrong people. So what you were speaking about all this time, Carlos, is really necessary because people need to know the truth of what's going on. They really do. I know that this is a short time. We have about 10 minutes left, and I know you probably will get cut off again. But I want to let the audience know we are going to carry this on. On December 9th, I'd like to have you back on again, the same time, 8:30 to 9:30. Actually, we'll go from 8:30 to 10 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And I'd like to have you come back on and talk more about all of this because
you have 1 minute remaining.
I would like to call back, and I would like to, the last few minutes, I would like to say something. I know I'm going to get cut off, but I want to start it now. I would like to thank all my family members have always been there for me. My amazing mother, no matter what I did in my life, She was always there for me. She made every sacrifice humanly known possible. No matter how much wrong I did, she was always there to help me, aid me. And she's always been there every step of the way. From her came my beautiful, beautiful sister. When I left society, man, she was 16 years old. And there hasn't been a day that she hasn't been in my life. That's my twin. She's my better half. She's my rock. She's been my rock for so, so many years. No matter what I was going through, I've always had my sister ever since we was kids. I was never the big brother to say, I ain't want my sister with me.
Thank you for using GTL.
I was so thankful and honored to have him on, Keisha, because he is for real. He is for real, and he's speaking out on behalf of so many people that are hurting so much. And I just want the audience to know, and I want anybody and everybody that heard this interview and to remind them to put it on your calendar for December 9th at 8:30 in a.m. to 10 o'clock a.m., because this is something that you need to hear. You never know when or if or when it'll ever happen in your family. But if it does, it's going to be people like us who have actually had to experience it and our loved ones who are going to be there for you before your friends. Because I will tell you right now, you can be the most popular person out there in the community. You can have a beautiful job. You can have a home. You can have all the luxuries that you probably have now, which we all had, or many of us had at one time. And when tragedy strikes, you lose it all. Then you learn that power and greed, materialistic things don't matter. You want your loved one. You want your family member. And while some mothers, as Carlos was saying, have been there for their children, have given them the love and all the things that they needed in life, there are mothers out there and fathers that are teaching their kids to hate, to use, to fight, to abuse. And sometimes those are the ones that cause another person to become incarcerated. And if anything happens where a family member or someone is harmed because of someone that has that kind of hatred, they need to blame themselves as well. Aisha, do you have anything else you want to say?
I want to let Carlos go ahead and finish.
Oh, Carlos is back. Okay.
So I want to thank my sister, my mother, for your amazing strength, your amazing dedication and commitment to me, no matter what I've done, my nephews, my niece, and my beautiful, beautiful son, Gregory. Man, you're in my heart, and I wish when I was 18, you was born at 17, I wish I had the knowledge and wisdom and intelligence to be a great father to you. I'm sorry that you had to suffer through your life without me, but I promise you, that I'll be a greater father to you going forward in my life. To all my cousins, I truly, truly appreciate your love and support. Tara, Kathy, and Ken specifically, Robert Earl, Ed, all the rest of you. I can't name everybody. And I want to thank one special person that made this amazing, that brought love into my life. Francine, if you out there listening, I love you with the weight of my heart. You mean so much to me. In closing, I want to say something about the youth real quick, because I was talking to my cousin, and she was like, well, the youth is not, you know, going out there to vote. And, you know, I believe in the youth. So I want to say something to that, to the people, to the elders, to the people that paved the way for us. I want y'all to just listen to this as we close. And I want to just say, I do not think it is the youth who lack the willingness to vote in today's society. I think it could be the elders, black men and women, who may have became discouraged in the process of voting because they have witnessed the generational unchanging of America. The youth, in my opinion, are out on the front lines when it comes to movements geared towards dismantling and destroying corrupted systems, institutions, ideologies of racism, sexism, prejudice, and mass incarceration. So I cannot see them not coming out to vote when they very well know that their vote is the essential key component in changing those systems, institutions, and ideologies. I think it is easy for us to blame the low voting turnout on the youth. But in all fairness, as a 48-year-old black man, I personally know many people my age and older who never votes. Their rationale is it just doesn't matter if I vote or not, because the powers that be still will not act accordingly. As I have worked to change their minds, some are enlightened by data and facts, and they register to vote. But most others are cemented in their beliefs. These people whom I speak of do not even watch the news, so current events escape them unless they are talked about in the circles they frequent. But the youth, I'm excited by their willingness to stand up and make a difference by protesting, marching, and coming out to vote. I feel like at times they are not given enough credit for the things they do sacrifice and make time for. So they may feel a little uninspired about certain things, but their overall courage and ambition is infectious for me, because as an older brother, I find myself many times following their lead, especially when their vision and insight is bringing forth progress and change. I think we need to take notice of the power the youth have and embrace it and stop being afraid of it. The elders have paved the way, made countless sacrifices for the youth to be able to stand in the very light that is shining upon them. And now it's time for us to stand back and trust them with the reins so they may inspire the next generation to be even more powerful than them. They are capable of changing the dynamics of our society, all the violence that we see perpetrated in our neighborhoods, and we must be there to encourage them with our strength, knowledge, and wisdom, but not our judgments, ridicules, and disbelief. We must lead by example. We can't tell them don't drink, but we alcoholics. We can't tell them don't do drugs, but we sitting in front of them doing drugs. We can't say treat your son and your daughter right when you not treating your son and your daughter right. We got to be the examples. That was the one big thing in my life that never made sense to me, because I was around a lot of people that talked, but they didn't walk it. So, Miss Leona, I thank
you. Carlos, I want to thank you, but there's one thing I want to say real quickly to the audience,
yes.
And then I want you to give the audience your information so they can get in contact with you or whatever. Carlos is an excellent writer. He is putting stuff together. He's going to be publishing his works. But I wanted to bring up the matter of voting. In this country, prisoners have had their voting rights taken from them. And I want to say this because we had the Capitol was attacked by so-called righteous people from the United States, all of these people that have been in the military, their Capitol was attacked. That's a terrorist attack on our own country. Yet these people have their voting rights. People incarcerated have committed an offense, and many are wrongfully convicted, and many are first-time offenders, and many are victims before becoming offenders. Many are remorseful. But I want to say one thing. Their offense was not against the country. There's no reason whatsoever that their voting rights should have been taken from them. And if we have a halfway decent government controlling this country, then they need to wake up and get some education from the people that... because they should know better than to take away the rights of U.S. citizens that are incarcerated, and yet let those people who attacked the Capitol, causing three or four of those police officers to commit suicide as well, and they still have the right to vote. And when they go to court right now with all of this investigation, they're getting a slap on the hand, 6 months to maybe 2 years. If this country wants to stop the terrorism, they better be giving harsher sentencing, or we're going to have an entire country invaded. And I just wanted to bring that up.
Right.
Carlos, please give the audience your information.
Okay, before I do that, I want to say real quick, because a lot of us don't understand it, right? So you got the 14th Amendment of the Constitution and the 15th Amendment of the Constitution. Now, what we don't understand is the 14th Amendment was created to give black people the right to citizenship. The citizenship, they say, under citizenship, that you should be able to enjoy all of the fruits of being under the umbrella of the United States. So just think about this. If you're a citizen of the United States, You a citizen. You get everything afforded to you based upon the Constitution. Now, check it. Now, if they really believe that you were citizens, why would they need the 15th Amendment? Now, the 15th Amendment gave us the right to vote. But if the 14th Amendment gave us citizenship, you would think that the right to vote was attached to that. So why would you have to create another amendment to do that? So that's just a point we can debate for another. But think about that. Now, my information, I got a book. I wrote a book called Pain is My Past, Love is My Future. You can find this book on Amazon.com. If you want to write to me, you can write me at Carlos King, using Carlos King. My inmate number is 222-974. You can log on to jpate.com and be able to send me a letter. I'll respond to any letter that you write. Or you can write me at the address, using my inmate number, 4269 West M80, Kinchelo, Kinchelo, Michigan, 49784. But for everybody that tuned in to listen, just understand this. Hope is the vice grip that held my mind together when failure seemed to be the only option available for me. So any one of you out there listening and you going through anything in your life, one thing that I have used to become strong and to be able to persevere within the harsh conditions of prison, it's time. The significance of time, because I understood that I have so very little of it left. And I never want to waste it again. So every moment, if you're working a job that you don't want to be, you feel like you ain't making enough money, then go make enough money. Find another job. Educate yourself even more to create your own business or your own avenue. But don't wallow in your misery complaining about this or that. Do something about it. Because when your eyes shut for you to rest in peace, then you will never know you was here to begin with. So before that happens, use your platform to become activated through your actions to bring about change within your conditions. And trauma, the people that suffer from trauma, so many of us are suffering from trauma. Talk to somebody. Excavate that from within you and deal with it. Because when you don't, it's constantly dealing with you. These are the paralyzation things that hinders us from success. We got to deal with it. It's like moving to a new residence. When you move to a new residence, you can't take everything that you have at your old residence. Some stuff is meant for the garbage. Thank
wisdom.
You.
Words of
in.
Wisdom.
And thank
you,
Leone, for giving me this opportunity.
That's the one thing we get from our trials and tribulations, from our downfalls. When we stumble, we learn more, we become more wise, and we can tell a story. Carlos, when you get out, you're going to be talking on the radio show yourself. You're going to be interviewing people because you need to be able to get more out, and you need to be able to bring more awareness. We want to thank the audience again. Thank you, Carlos, for being on with us. Laisha?
Aisha, yes, Leone, yes. Thank you so much. I love you, Carlos.
I know so many people with that name that it's difficult for me to keep track of with the name. But thanks again for being on with us. We thank the audience, and we look forward to having you on again. And as I mentioned earlier, Carlos will be on with us again on December 9th, 2021 at 8:30 a.m. Thank you so much, both of you.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode will now be ending.
All right. Take care.